Hey, thank you so much for this opportunity where I can get to share on the third Advent Sunday. I want to start out by saying that, you know, just recently, about a few weeks ago, I got an alert on my phone, New York Times alert, and with a headline, South Korean President Declares Martial Law. Now, within hours, my Korean American friend and I were just, you know, texting, and also with Brittany as well. And you can see one of the, maybe go to the next slide. You can see one, oh, that's it before that. So you can see the text message. Actually, we were texting. And, I think we were just all in disbelief. And my friend Dan said, well, it feels like 1980 deja vu. And he started recounting memories of growing up amidst, protest, tear gas, demonstration, violent clashes during the South Korea's struggle for democracy. And, you know, and my familiarity of Korean struggle for democracy came from a lot of scenes in K-drama, right? And so, but aside from that, it struck deeper chord with me. In the following hours, we saw mass protests erupted in Seoul, and dramatic standoffs between the president and the lawmakers. Even a military general actually declares that he has full control over the media outlets. And this really, I was really deeply worried, not just for my friend's home country, but for the fragile state of democracy itself. Thankfully, this crisis ended in a few hours. But next morning, we learned that this martial law has been rescinded, and even to, you know, as of yesterday, I think this president was being impeached, and there was a travel ban on the president, and who knows what will happen. And I think we still will kind of understand, we'll learn more about the impact on that country. But what does that have to do with this, right, with me? The event brought back memories of my childhood in Taiwan. Which endured 38 years of martial law under a dictatorial regime. So from 1949 to 1987, over 150,000 people imprisoned and more than 35,000 people executed. These are just the known number, and there are many other numbers that are probably higher. For me, this wasn't just history or statistics. For me, it's actually quite personal. I grew up hearing stories of relatives disappeared. I grew up along with my classmates were forbidden to speak my native tongue, Taiwanese, in school. You get beaten if you do so. You get beaten by teachers or the student deans if you speak your own native tongue of Taiwanese. And we endure a rigid and militarized education system that demanded blind patriotism. Corporal punishment was routine, reflecting the authoritarian culture of compliance. So as a middle schooler, I discovered the ideal of liberty, freedom, and democracy by reading books. They felt like a distant dream, beautiful but out of reach. So when my dad announced that we were moving to the United States, I couldn't contain my excitement. I even told my parents, hey, take me out of school early. I'm done. And my classmates were like, what are you doing? You know, so I got out of school about a semester early, and I would show up at school and play basketball. Like, hey, peace out. See you later. So, but ironically, my time in the U.S. was far from what I have hoped for or imagined. Language barriers initially, and I came in as a ninth grader, 14 years old, didn't speak a lick of English. Language barriers really elicited a lot of ridicules in school. As years goes by, the pressure to assimilate rather than celebrating my culture, and continue all the way into my 30s. And also the sting of racialized mistreatments, including a close brush with racial violence, left me deeply disillusioned. The ideal that I had longed for felt out of reach again. Now, even more ironic is this, maybe the next slide, is that since my departure, Taiwan actually was transformed into a vibrant democracy, a flourishing economy, and a vibrant cultural hub in Asia Pacific, right? And it boasts to have the first national free healthcare in Asia. In fact, when the Obamacare was trying to implement, they went to Taiwan to study the Taiwan's healthcare. And it has the first, and still is the only country that has a female president. So they elected a female president, and she finished her two terms just last year. Now, despite of these disappointment and ironies, my fascination with truth, with justice, with freedom, has some transcendent, these kind of as a transcendent ideals really never faded. In fact, my experience coupled with my newfound faith in Jesus during the college years gave me a deeper desire to see God's justice in this world. God calls me to love deeply, to commit wholeheartedly, and to act justly with those he places in my life. And so as I wrestle with the tension with life's dreams and ideals and hope, and also disappointment and disillusionment, I wonder, what is joy really? What is joy really? Here in this space, I want to contend that this longing for truth, justice, and beauty, at least to me, is a gift from God. And recognizing it as such is to experience joy. But what do I mean by this? Let me explain. There's no other people that I can think of than Archbishop Desmond Tutu of South Africa. The late Archbishop Desmond Tutu, as a spiritual anchor for lots of people during the apartheid South Africa, he is no stranger to holding hope, dreams, and disappointment and pain altogether. He once described joy, listen to these words, he once described joy as independent of external circumstances, and it is greater than happiness. I think that's a helpful definition for us to think about. It's independent of external circumstances and greater than happiness. When asked how he could embody joy after enduring the pain of apartheid, he said, "Ultimately, our greatest joy is when we seek to do good for others. It's how we are made." Wow, how we are made. We are wired to be compassionate. Now he likened joy to a mother enduring the pains of childbirth. Intense suffering transformed into indescribable joy the moment the baby is born. Now obviously I never experienced that. But I watched Britney. Holy cow. I almost fainted. but the little bit of an experience I have, it was, I remember when Ethan was born, and it was a very first time dad, you know, just crazy, crazy process. I literally brought my whole house into the labor room, carrying everything. And I remember after all that, and, you know, dead tired, Brittany's passed out, and then Ethan was a little baby, and I held him in my arm, and I'm on the little side chair. And then I just, like, burst out in tears. I start crying. And it's a tear of joy. And so here, it's interesting, and Jesus actually said that. This idea is echoed in what Jesus said. Jesus said in John 16, a woman, I don't have a slide for that, but that's okay. John 16, a woman giving birth to a child has pain because her time has come. But when her baby is born, she forgets the anguish because of her joy that a child is born into the world. So let's go to the next slide. This reflects the joy that Jesus experienced and exemplified. Right, in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 2 says, "For the joy set before him, he endured the cross." Here's a prime example of holding this hope and this something that is in the distant, and holding the pain and the struggle of now. And before going to the cross, Jesus said to his disciple in John 15, "I have told you this so that my joy may be in you, and that your joy may be complete. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you." And somehow in this little tiny verse, Jesus connects the alignment of our lives to his commands, and that leads to the completion of joy. A powerful stuff. As Desmond Tutu had noted, joy often surprises us. It is not something we can pursue directly. Joy comes as a product of recognizing God's gift, chiefly the gift of Jesus, and aligning our lives with his purpose. Aligning our lives with his purpose. Now, as far as I'm concerned, it is kind of difficult to model after Desmond Tutu. I mean, you know, wow, what a man of faith, who is an incredible human being, right? And a man of God. When he was alive, his infectious laughter can definitely amaze and inspire. But what does that mean for me? Does that mean that somehow I had to muster up some positivity and smile and laugh the same way? What does it mean? Would I be able to hold joy with other complex human experience and emotion? Let's go to the next slide. Let me share a little bit about the state of my heart right now. I just want to be vulnerable and be honest with you. This has been a complicated holiday season for me. Just before Thanksgiving, I received a wonderful news of adopted son Tevin, who celebrated his 30th birthday in July. So we were there in Boston to celebrate his birthday with him. Told us he got engaged to his girlfriend. Whew. Didn't thought that was going to happen. We're so excited for him. And it's been quite a journey with our lives intertwined over the past 15 years, full of ups and downs. This was a moment of pure joy. We can go to the next slide. Around the same time, I received a phone call from a dear friend of mine for whom I have done a lot of work in Nepal. Now, together, we actually have built and started an orphanage, and we had developed numerous initiatives to bless and uplift our friends in Nepal. On the call, she tearfully informed me that Suray, one of the kids that we rescued, who had grown into a young man in his early 20s, had taken his life. Su Rui was a bright and clever young man with a big, mischievous smile and a twinkle in his eyes. He loved board games and card games and always trying to outsmart us. And he affectionately called me Uncle Mike whenever I visited him and the other kids at the Hope House, and which is in a small town in Nepal. I vividly remember the last time I saw him, I had taken all the kids from the Hope House on an outing to swim by in a nearby river. Watching them play with unbounded happiness, showing off their fanciest river acrobats, filled my heart with joy. I can still hear their laughter, screams, and giggles echoing in my mind. So the news of Suray's death shook me deeply. And yet I find myself emotionless, unable to fully process. I'm not very good at emotion. I always say my emotion, I'm hungry, happy, angry, that's it. I have hard time processing this emotion. I do experience a few moments of kind of choke up a little bit, but I still don't really quite know how to process it. But there are some questions I keep thinking. I keep wondering, did we do enough for Suray? Did I do enough for Suray? Should I have kept in touch with him more often? Should I have visited him more recently? His passing has left so many unanswered questions for me and my friend. And now I ask myself, how does this fit into the equation of joy? Well, I suspect that this season, this Christmas season, this moment, I need that gift of Jesus the most. I need to once again unwrap this gift, this grace. I need to remember that joy is a gift. Joy is a gift. So I go back to the prophecy of Isaiah chapter 9 about the gift of Christ. So consider these words. For to us, a child is born. To us, a son is given. And the government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and Prince of Peace. These words invite us to fix our eyes on the extraordinary birth of a child. This birth would come after a long time of waiting and silence of God for Israel. And yet somehow, this birth would become a profound source of hope. The hope that comes from the promise that this child will carry all the burdens, our expectations, our longing for something powerful like government or like democracy or whatever the system or that is greater than, bigger than us, we often have certain expectation and longing for them to fix. And yet this will be on this child's shoulder. And even our deep disappointment with the broken promises of those we have trusted, that will also be on this child's shoulder. This child will bear it all. And he will be called a Wonderful Counselor, a title we now understand as referring to Jesus' Spirit, the Holy Spirit, who remains with us and walks alongside us through our journey. In the book of Acts, we read about Paul and Barnabas in Antioch sharing the love of Jesus. When they were persecuted, the text said they shook the dust off their feet and went to Iconium. And the disciples were filled with joy and with the Holy Spirit. He is also called the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, and the Prince of Peace. This hope, a deep, abiding hope that lies buried at the very depth of our souls, is awakened by the promise of this child. And we now know that this is Jesus, who lived a life embodying God's justice, mercy, and love. He also died to bury the weight of all that is broken and sinful, taking upon himself the penalty it required, and yet in him, what is broken is held in tension with the promises of something new, something redeemed. This is a gift. Joy is a gift. It is not something we can earn, nor it is something we can buy. Joy is a gift, freely given, bound up in the person of Jesus. It is a gift that does not merely anchors us in the present. It lifts our eyes, pointing us forward to a greater hope. It is a gift that challenges us not to stand by on the sideline, but to step into the hard and holy work of loving others deeply, even when it costs us. It is a gift that burns with a passion for justice, urging us to speak truth, to act boldly, and to stand firmly for what is right and stand with those who are marginalized. It is a gift that humbles us, calls us to walk not with pride, but with faithfulness, hand in hand with our Creator. It is a gift that defies isolations. It cannot be hoarded. It cannot be grasped alone. Joy blooms when shared, when lived out in the company of others. It is a gift forged in the fire of suffering, a paradox of grace that redeems us. Joy is not the absence of pain, but the presence of purpose. It is a gift that multiplies when we align our hearts with God's work and engaging in the work that He cares about with the people we care about. This is the gift of joy, a joy that is profound, a joy that transforms, and a joy that endures. Joy is not fleeting happiness. It is the steady light of God's presence and a gift that shapes us, defines us, and sends us out to make this world a reflection of His love. So I need a reminder. I need to remember in this season that it is a joy that my life and Tevin's life are bound up together toward what is good, restorative, and healing for both him and for me and for my family. I also need to remember that while I grieve the loss of Sure, I will continue to do the work of justice, love, and mercy. Whether it's in Nepal, whether it's here in Berkeley, Albany, Pacifica, or anywhere else. And also it is with the people that I can do this work with. And there's a joy in that. So worship team, would you please go ahead and come back on the stage? Thank you. So as I wrap up, as I conclude, and during the time of worship, I invite you to go to the Advent table, pick a card, and write down what joy is to you this season. And what tension are you holding? as you reflect on the possibility of experiencing joy. So do take that moment and step out in faith and vulnerability and to offer that as a word of prayer to the Lord. So a gift that is to us requires us to unwrap it. We need to unwrap a presence for the presence to the effect and impact on our lives. So how do we unwrap the gift of joy this season? Joy is not a prize to be won or a treasure to be chased. Joy is a gift, a sacred gift, revealed to us when our lives align with God's purposes. It is found not in the pursuit of our own desires, but in the embrace of justice and the practice of mercy and the offering of love. When we orient our hearts toward the things that matter to God, joy emerges, not as a fleeting feeling, but as a steady and abiding presence. Joy finds us, even in the midst of hardship. Joy sustains us even when the world feels unsteady. This Christmas, let us pause. Let us reflect on the greatest gift of all, Jesus Christ, the source of unshakable joy. In Him, we find not just hope, but the power to live lives that mirror His justice, His mercy, and His love. And as we unwrap this gift together, we're called to share it. Share it generously, boldly, and without reservation. For joy, like love, multiplies when it is given away. So this season, may we not just receive the gift of joy, but embody it. May we become the hands and feet of Jesus Christ, bringing justice where it is absent, mercy where it is needed, and love where it is scarce. Joy is a gift. Let us unwrap it. Let us live it. Let us share it with a world longing for its light. May the Prince of Peace guide you into the fullness of joy this Advent season.